Case is taken under advisement, and we'll proceed to the fourth case, Goodwin versus the Board of Trustees. Mr. Otto.
May it please the court, Mr. Hill. My name is John Otto, and I represent the appellant, Audrey Goodwin. The trial court granted summary judgment to the defendants on the grounds that Audrey Goodwin could not prove the fourth element of the McDonnell-Douglas test, that similarly situated employees outside protected class were treated more favorably. Excuse me. Ms. Goodwin is a longtime employee of the University of Illinois. Her performance was not an issue. In fact, she got rave reviews except for the one incident in question, the details of which are disputed. She was demoted for allegedly showing a vulgar email to six of her subordinates and for threatening one of them if he didn't deny having seen the email. There was a factual dispute as to whether she intentionally showed the email to her subordinates and as to whether she threatened one of them. Those factual disputes were resolved in Ms. Goodwin's favor by the Civil Service Merit Board, and they ordered, after hearing, that Ms. Goodwin be reinstated by her employer to her former position and that she be made whole. The defendants refused to reinstate her and they refused to make her whole. There were three white males whom Ms. Goodwin proffered as comparators for the fourth prong of the McDonnell-Douglas test. Kip Meekum, a supervisor three levels above Ms. Goodwin, was one of them. He admitted that he had received vulgar emails, and there was testimony by one of his subordinates, Mr. Cornegay, that he had received from Mr. Meekum non-business-related emails, which was contrary to the university's policy against personal use of emails. The trial court tossed out Mr. Meekum as a comparator because it said that he was not on the same level as Ms. Goodwin. And as this court said in Azale versus Potter, the two comparators don't have to be on the same level. In that case, the court compared a mail carrier with the mail carrier supervisor. The trial court also said that Mr. Meekum could not be used as a comparator because he did not show the vulgar emails to his subordinates. But Ms. Goodwin likewise denied that she intentionally showed the vulgar emails to her subordinates. The trial court also said that Mr. Meekum did not threaten subordinates to prevent them from sharing information about the emails. And Ms. Goodwin likewise denied threatening any of her subordinates. The defendants make the argument in their brief that you have to compare what the employee was accused of doing. Thus, Ms. Goodwin was accused of threatening an employee, and Mr. Meekum was not accused of that. But that could not be the test. That doesn't make sense. Otherwise, a racist supervisor could get rid of an employee by accusing her of assaulting him when all she did was say good morning. And unless the plaintiff could find a white supervisor who was likewise falsely accused of assaulting someone, then the comparison would be different. Mr. Meekum should have been considered by the trial court as a comparison to Ms. Goodwin because...
And what was his age again?
Mr. Meekum's age?
Yes, I'm just...
He's a little bit younger than she is. I can't recall offhand, but I think he's in his late 40s, and she's early 60s. Next, the plaintiff proffered Dale Elder, who was caught not receiving an email but actively seeking out pornography on the Internet. Mr. Elder received only a warning for his behavior, and the trial court said, no, we can't consider Mr. Elder because he's a step below Ms. Goodwin, and his behavior was not exactly the same. He sought out pornography rather than receiving a vulgar email.
And his age?
He was also younger, and I don't recall the exact age, but I think he was in his early 40s, if I remember correctly. The third comparator that the plaintiff proffered to the district court was on exactly the same level. He was also a building service supervisor, just like the plaintiff. His name was Ray Northway, and it was undisputed that he threw a bottle cap at a fellow supervisor and told her, and I won't use the vulgarity that he did, but it's in the briefs, he told her what to do with the bottle cap.
And how old was he?
He was also a younger person.
And you know a little more? I wasn't able to find that in the briefs. I could have just missed it. But that...
Well, we've proceeded on race and sex because the court dismissed the age count because of the 11th Amendment. The court said that Mr. Northway, even though he was on the same level as Ms. Goodwin, was not a proper comparison because his conduct was not threatening to a subordinate. It's not clear to me from the district court opinion as to whether the district court was holding as a matter of law that throwing a bottle cap at someone and using this vulgarity is not threatening, or whether it's saying that the theory is that all of the comparisons must have exactly the same must be exactly the same conduct. If it's the former, if the trial court's saying that it's not threatening as a matter of law to throw a bottle cap at someone and tell them where to shove it, then the court is invading the province of the jury in making a finding of fact.
What exactly was the disciplinary charge against the plaintiff that was later overturned by the review board?
She was demoted for threatening a supervisor, for improperly using company email, the email process.
Okay, so the improper use of the computer and the threatening of the subordinate, or
that's
the intimidation
correct.
Of the subordinate, that was the nature of the charges?
Yes.
And both of those were found to be unsubstantiated?
That's correct.
Can you speak a little to the adverse employment action? Because I understand she's claiming that she couldn't get overtime. Is there evidence in the record that she actually took home less pay? Is it just that more overtime was not available, or was it prohibited in this new assignment?
The new assignment, when she was supposedly reinstated to mm-hmm. building foreman, was one that did not call for overtime. As the head of the moving crew, she worked a lot of overtime, and there's evidence what her earnings were before she was demoted and what her earnings were after.
And the earnings were less after.
Yes, correct.
And was it just that overtime opportunities didn't present themselves to her when she took the lesser position? Or was it prohibited?
Well, I don't know that it was prohibited, but in the lesser position, that whoever held that position did not get overtime, whether it was her or someone else.
So, in other words, no. I just wondered, is it a situation where, in that position, you can get paid for overtime, but it just never occurred that you were able to get overtime?
That's exactly the situation. Yes.
Okay.
I see. I'm running into the rebuttal time that I had reserved. And so I'll reserve the rest of my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Otto. Mr. Hill?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Keith Hill, and I represent the Board of Trustees of the University of Illinois, Randy Cornegay and Kip Meekum. Your Honor, this court should affirm the district court's order granting summary judgment in my client's favor because plaintiff cannot show under the direct method of proof that the Board of Trustees' reason for demoting her was motivated by race or gender, nor can plaintiff prove a prima facie case of race or gender discrimination under the indirect method of proof. As an initial matter, it is important to address who was the decision maker in this case. Randy Cornegay was the decision maker. He is the one who admitted in his deposition that he was the decision maker, and Kip Meekum backed him up on this. Randy Cornegay is the person who signed and authored the notice of preliminary meeting, the letter of intent to file notice of demotion, letter placing plaintiff on administrative leave, the letter of intent to go forward with the motion, the notice of demotion, and the memorandum of unacceptable work performance. The fact that Mr. Cornegay may have consulted with others or that his supervisor, Kip Meekum, agreed with his decision does not alter the fact that he was the sole decision maker. Plaintiff must argue that Kip Meekum was a decision maker because Randy Cornegay is an African American, and she admitted in her deposition that she does not believe that Mr. Cornegay discriminated against her based on her race or gender. This submission alone, Your Honors, combined with the fact that Mr. Cornegay was in fact a decision maker, should doom plaintiff's claim. Now, in an attempt to provide direct evidence of discrimination, plaintiff relies on this alleged remark by Charles Hassel, who was her direct supervisor. Plaintiff does not recall the exact words of that Mr. Hassel allegedly used, but she testified that he said something to the effect of, historically, this is a white male position, you are a strong black female, you dress professionally, you follow the rules, you're strict, people don't like that. Well, first of all, Mr. Hassel categorically denies having made this statement. He testified that's not something he would have said. But even if he had made that statement does not arise to an acknowledgement.
Did he say he didn't remember saying it, as opposed to categorically denying that he said
that?
That
was his initial testimony, Your Honor. Then on cross by, I believe, university counsel at the time, he clarified and said, no, that's not something I would say. And I call that a categorical deny of that particular statement. Additionally, Your Honor, even if he had made the statement, that's not something that rises to a level of acknowledgement of discriminatory intent. It's not the smoking gun that this court looks for. It's not, I demoted you because you're African American, or I demoted you because you are female. Furthermore, Mr. Hassel is an African American, and the inference should be that he would not discriminate against a member of his own protected class. Additionally, as I said earlier, he was not the decision maker. Randy Cornegay was. So here, there has to be evidence that there is no evidence that that particular statement reflected Mr. Cornegay's view, nor is there evidence that that particular statement or that particular alleged discriminatory attitude was or tainted Mr. Cornegay's judgment. All that plaintiff can argue is that Mr. Hassel participated in the decision and that he agreed with Cornegay's participating in the investigation and that he agreed with Cornegay's decision.
What was Kip Meekum's role in the demotion?
Kip Meekum is Randy Cornegay's supervisor.
Does he have to sign off on a discipline of that nature?
I don't know if that's in the record, Your Honor, but Mr. Meekum testified that it was Randy Cornegay's decision, and although he agreed with it, he did say it was Mr. Cornegay's initial decision. Kip Meekum did not participate in the investigation. He was notified that what the investigation was going on, but it was Cornegay and Hassel's investigation. He was not involved in any way.
But who has the authority, though, is my question.
I believe that Mr. Cornegay would have the authority. He's the one who signed off on all the notices of demotion.
What does the record tell us as to whose decision it was, whose authority, who had the
Your Honor,
authority
I don't know
to
if
make the decision?
That particular matter was addressed in the record. If it was, I'm mistaken. But again, Mr. Cornegay signed off on the notice of demotion. And also, I really don't think it matters whether Cornegay or Meekum was the decision maker in this case. And if Meekum was a decision maker, then it's even more attenuated trying to connect Hassel's alleged statement to Meekum. It doesn't show that Meekum would have been, that's not Meekum's view necessarily, and it wouldn't be that Meekum's judgment was tainted by Hassel, who's two supervisors down from him. So I think ultimately it really doesn't matter who was the decision maker, but it is our position that Mr. Cornegay was.
So did Mr. Meekum sign paperwork affirming the decision of Cornegay? Did he have to sign off?
There's nothing that I've seen in the record to that, Your Honor. Now, getting to the indirect method of proof, the district court correctly found that plaintiff cannot demonstrate that similarly situated persons outside of her protected classes were treated more favorably. Now, here, plaintiff argues that the comparable conduct should be merely receiving a vulgar email, but that ignores the fact that she left it on her screen to be seen by her subordinates.
Well, but look at Northway. I mean, Northway, they were at the same employment level. They had generally the same qualifications. Their work was certainly, I mean, this behavior was certainly not identical, but it was certainly inappropriate conduct and certainly close to it when you look at what he did and what she did.
Well, as the merit board found, is that plaintiff exercised poor judgment by leaving this email on the screen. I think the poor judgment is reflected in the fact that she, as a supervisor, was allowing subordinates. She was being a poor example and a poor leadership role for her subordinates and allowing that to be
there.
Yeah,
but what I'm saying is when he got a warning letter and he threw something at a female employee who reported to him and then was quoted cursing at.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's true. But the important factor there is that the person that he made this remark to was also a supervisor. It was not to a subordinate, and he was not, there's no evidence that subordinates were around or this sort of thing. So I think that that's sufficient varying circumstances to affect the board trustee's treatment of that particular conduct. I don't think it has to be identical conduct, Your Honor, but if the circumstances are sufficiently distinguishing, they're not similarly situated.
So this person was not a subordinate, it was another supervisor?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. Now that gets to the issue of issue preclusion, which wasn't addressed by counsel, but if this court were to give a preclusive effect to the merit board's finding of fact, as I said earlier, the merit board found that plaintiff, or one of the grounds for her demotion, was upheld. They found that she should have deleted this email, she should not have allowed her employees or her subordinates to see it, and that she exercised poor judgment by not immediately deleting it. Therefore, if this court were to give preclusive effect to those findings of fact, plaintiff cannot prove her prima facie case because she would not be meeting the board of trustees' legitimate performance expectations. A supervisor does not meet her employer's legitimate performance expectations when she displays a vulgar email to her subordinates. Plaintiff can also not prove pretext. And again, even if this court were to give preclusive effect to the merit board's findings of fact, that is not enough. This court will not sit, as the merit board did, as a super personnel department and second-guess Cornegie's judgment. Cornegie investigated the intimidation and email incident. He honestly believed that those charges were supported, and he demoted plaintiff because of that. The issue is not the correctness or the desirability of the employer's decision, rather whether Mr. Cornegie honestly believed in the reasons he offered. And plaintiff has not offered any evidence to suggest that at the time he made the decision, he did not honestly believe that those charges were supported, and that's why that he demoted her. So for those reasons, Your Honor, we would respectfully request that this court affirm the district court's order granting summary judgment in favor of my clients. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Mr. Otto, your brief suggests that in the Northway incident that it's a female subordinate.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes.
Of course, the brief of Mr. Hill says it was another foreman. And as I read Judge McCuskey's order, in this opinion in this case, he said it was also a foreman. So, what
I think it's just a poor choice of words. They're using foreman for a woman. My understanding is that it was a female.
No, I'm not speaking to gender. I'm following up on Judge Williams saying, is it your position that it was a subordinate? No.
I'm sorry if the brief.
It says.
Yeah, your brief said it was a female subordinate.
Right.
Okay.
And that's a big fact. I mean, that has some consequence legally.
No, that's an error.
And
I'm sorry about that. I wasn't aware that we had made that mistake. It was another supervisor at whom Mr. Northway threw the bottle cap and made the comment. I'm somewhat frustrated that counsel for the defendants keeps saying that Mr. Hassel categorically denies he made the statement that we quoted about the plaintiff being black and people not liking that. He said in his testimony he didn't remember making the statement. When defense counsel tried to rehabilitate him later, he did say he didn't think he would make a statement like that, but he never made a categorical denial that he had.
Let's assume he made the statement. What do you read into that as being critical? I mean, it does uphold her as a tough enforcer, sort of a drill sergeant. But what in the statement do you believe it suggests an animus?
It refers to her being a black woman and being a tough black woman that enforces the rules. It was made during the time of the investigation into what had happened by the person who was doing, one of the people who was making the investigation. And as I say in my brief, I don't know that that by itself, because he doesn't identify who the people are, is sufficient to carry the day for direct evidence. It certainly is not as strong as if he said, "I don't like you because you're a black woman." But I think it's certainly circumstantial evidence. The final, I see my time is up, but Mr. Cornegie, according to the defendants, was the sole decision maker. That's not the testimony. Mr. Meekum said that he could override Mr. Cornegay's decision. That's at page 247 of the long appendix. And so that's not accurate. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Otto. Thank you, Mr. Hill. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.